Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM. Listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Community Conversations with your hosts, Phil and Julie. Good morning, Julie.
Well, good morning, Phil. How's it going?
Oh, it's wonderful. And everyone knows by now, of course, we're recording these a few days ahead, but I am really looking forward to it turning spring this weekend. By the time this plays, it will be spring.
Oh, it will. Spring will have come and gone and will probably be in rainy weather. Normally, we talk about what adventure or misadventure I've had in the previous week. Phil, I don't really have much except that yesterday I got my COVID vaccine.
Well, that doesn't sound like a misadventure. At least let's hope not.
That's right. It was easy. It was really easy.
Good for you. Yeah, it's been nice having the light be a little bit later. I can get an evening walk in even after work, which is just fabulous.
And you've been out to Round Lake, I think.
Yep, we've been out to Round Lake a couple times this week, once for a scouting expedition and then once for the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Winter Tracks class with a bunch of kiddos. It was really nice to have a return to some in-person education events. And that's one of the fun things that a lot of organizations get to do around here. And I think we might even talk a little bit about that with our guests today.
I think we will. And while Round Lake is a trout lake, I don't think either of our guests are avid Round Lake trout fishers. I know the first one I'm going to introduce likes the little tiny streams, and we'll talk more about trout fishing with the second one. So Phil, we're lucky this week to be talking with folks that work with Trout Unlimited at the local and at the national level, and I'll go ahead and introduce them. First, Bill Love. Bill, you are the president of the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Julie. How are you? And good to see you again, Phil.
I'm good. Great to have you, Phil. And then our second guest today is Aaron Plew. Aaron, you are a relatively new employee for Trout Unlimited at the national level, and that's kind of exciting. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you both. So you've both been on our morning show before, but it's been a while for you, Aaron, and you worked in a different capacity. And Bill, I don't think we've talked with you in a while. So for listeners who haven't heard you before, Bill, will you give us just a bit of history about yourself and how you got involved with Trout Unlimited? Then we'll move on to Aaron.
Well, thank you, Julie. And I consider myself relatively new to Trout Unlimited. I've been a member for well over a dozen years or so, but I had not been very active in the local chapter until the last several years. And one thing leads to another. And if you attend two or three meetings, then all of a sudden a couple of the leaders call you together for coffee and they pay the bill. And when you walk out of that, then you're elected as an officer. But I've certainly enjoyed working with Trout Unlimited at the local level. It's always been my philosophy in any organization that I've been involved with. It's the very local level is really the where so much of the work gets done, and the relationships are built with local people doing local projects and that sort of thing. So I've certainly enjoyed the time that I've served on the board and now as an officer with the Panhandle chapter.
Yes, and as a disclosure, I'm a member of Trout Unlimited and also on the board, and I'm going to compliment you on the excellent job you've been doing. I hope you'll remain a long time, Bill.
Well, it seems like in many small organizations, any leadership role tends to be a lifetime appointment as long as you're willing to do it. And let me disclose one other thing just real quickly, Julie. I am a big visitor of Round Lake State Park. In fact, I've stopped there twice in the last week or so just to see whether or not the ice was off. Interestingly, the first time I stopped earlier this week, there was still ice on the lake, but there were four or five people sitting at the end of the dock fishing. I don't know whether they were sitting at the dock and fishing through holes in the ice, but anyway, it's just about time to hit the small lakes.
And the eagles would agree with you. This week, there's been a lot of eagle activity, even more than normal at Round Lake. So that ice coming off has increased the birds of prey, fish prey coming in.
Yes. Well, Aaron,
Round Lake State Park.
Oh, sorry to cut you off, Bill, but I'm going to ask Aaron to introduce herself and tell us just a bit about her background, how she came to be in Sandpoint, and then how you came to be working for Trout Unlimited National, Aaron.
All right. Thanks, Julie. That feels like a really large, circuitous question. I guess I'll just give a little bit of my professional background that kind of led me into this role. I studied in college aquatic ecology and forest ecology, and I worked for a little bit of time on stream restoration work and worked landscaping and with vegetation and ran a native plant nursery. I worked with plants quite a bit. And then I went on and I taught about natural resources for a long time to kids. And then I went on to get a master's in education for secondary science and went down a road of teaching for a while. But then I came to Sandpoint and never really found the teaching job I wanted. And so I kind of went back down into the natural resources path, worked on aquatic invasive species for years. And then the last time I was on this show, I was working for the Lakes Commission, which works on kind of all things surface water, and get a really big bird's eye view of our Pend'Oreille system. And in that job, I got to know a lot of people. Then I worked for a little while in the for Idaho Forest Group for a lumber company, and I really enjoyed that. And I think like I've worked in government level, I've worked on a nonprofit level, I've worked on industry level, and worked on multiple natural resources. But I always want to float back into surface water. I really am passionate about this topic. I know it. I know the issues, and I know the people. And so I saw this job for Trout Unlimited, and I was already kind of working on some of this stuff, and I just got really interested in it.
It sounds like your whole career has pointed you towards this moment, as so often happens. Tell us just a little bit about the job. Give us a short position description of your new job with Trout Unlimited.
I'm project manager for the Coeur d'Alene system, which means I manage restoration projects primarily. There's a large education element to it as well. So at any level, school age or adult education, talking about the challenges that face the Coeur d'Alene system.
Yeah, very good. Well, we've heard a bit about what each of you do, a little bit about your backgrounds, but let's go back to Trout Unlimited in a bigger picture way. So could one of you share with us the mission and maybe a bit of history, typical projects with Trout Unlimited? Oh, they're both looking at each other. Who wants to handle that one?
I can just run through the actual mission. I wrote it down so I could recall it. So the mission, although right now they're in their five-year review process, so that the potentially it could change a little bit. But currently it's to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and watersheds. They started in 1959, a bunch of fishermen who they were relying pretty heavily on stocking fish in that era. And they thought if we restore the habitat, potentially we could restore the fishing and get some stronger fish in there. And that's where it stemmed from. Bill, do you want to say any more about it?
I think that's a perfect explanation. And one of the interesting things about Trout Unlimited is many people not familiar with the organization think that there were all a bunch of anglers which most of us are, and that it, and tend to think of us more of, as a fishing club, but we're certainly far beyond that. You know, we certainly socialize together and go on fishing trips together and talk fishing anytime we're together. But it's that overarching conservation mission that really binds us together and makes us much more than just a group of pals that like to go fishing together.
So the model is there. It seems similar to Ducks Unlimited, where the obvious interest in duck hunting is there, but so is the conservation work. And the same seems true with Trout Unlimited. And there's this national organization that's really widely recognized. And then there's individual chapters. Tell us about that structure and that affiliation.
Well, I'll talk a little bit about the chapter organization for what it means. The Idaho Panhandle chapter is chapter number 431, and so that obviously indicates that there are several hundred chapters throughout the United States. And what's always been surprising to me is when I look at some of the southern states, they even have some chapters of Trout Unlimited, especially in the northern part of, say, Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, where the water is cold enough to support trout and other cold water fishery. But anyway, so it's this national network of chapters, obviously made up of volunteers that do so much of the work at the local level of everything from projects to education to many types of volunteer activities.
Sure. Well, Aaron, tell us where the National Trout Unlimited comes along and how they are able to help with the local chapters. Tell us what happens at National.
So National, primarily the focus is on restoration work. And I can dive a little deeper into that, but there's also a policy element when a policy change could really impact our fishery, TU will get active on it. The words for Trout Unlimited are protect, reconnect, restore, and sustain. And I think that's kind of driving all of these actions from a national level to the chapter level. The goals are to protect our waterways, to reconnect them if there's anything that's, you know, dams or whatever it might be that's creating a disconnect or a barrier, to restore them, and then to sustain that. So often the chapter ties in quite a bit with the sustaining of that. We have a lot of eyes out there able to talk about what the needs are and also to educate about it, to continue to bring attention to it. And sometimes maybe even put in an easement or work to protect the actual area.
Yeah, so the National can bring some expertise to a local chapter when needed and offer some support in local areas also.
On the project management level, for restoration projects, we can also bring in the chapter to help with on the ground restoration work or monitoring, or any volunteer really who wants to get out and help.
So you've mentioned a few times some specific things and the word restoration, which I think we have a collective understanding of, but what are the things that we are restoring it to? What has happened to our water that it needs restoration? What are the threats?
But basically it's pretty incredible when you think about it, but virtually every stream in America has been impacted in one way or another by agriculture, historic and even current timber practices, hydropower, roads, and mining. But often what you see is that our streams have been channelized, like made straighter. We've removed the woody debris in them. And for a long time, we thought that wood, like trees that have fallen in the streams, were damaging, but they are a major habitat element for fish. The waters are warming for one reason or another, whether it's dams or even climate change. it's kind of endless, the impacts, but our waterways, I think, looked very different than we can even imagine previous to the last 200 years over here.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, things like invasive species are an issue, and then of course chemicals. There's a lot of things affecting waterways today, plants, animals, so much.
Yeah, I mean, I work on mining, and that has its own list of impacts, and just pollution in general, that's coming off our roadways, or fish are pretty adaptive, but there's some major barriers for their success right now, for cold water fish especially.
Right.
So is there a strategic vision that guides the restoration work, sets priorities for the national TU and the chapters?
I would say it goes back to those four words, but it's more like if there's a basin that gets a project manager that TU's decided is a priority for whatever reason, I mean, the Coeur d'Alene Basin is because it has a history of a lot of mining, then you follow that basin's prioritization. So I'm working with all the other partners who work in that basin, following the strategy they've come up with.
And what are some of the other partners that work with Trout Unlimited?
Any landowner. So it could be a private landowner, it could be the federal government, it could be state government, it could be local. It could be anybody. It could be another nonprofit, it could be a land trust, any of those.
Bill wants to comment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one interesting thing about the Idaho Panhandle chapter is our area actually includes three Indian tribes, the Kalispell tribe, the Kootenai tribe, and the Coeur d'Alene tribe. And so, they were working in fishery management for subsistence long before we were ever around. And so we certainly try every opportunity we can to partner with the tribes that are within our area. And interestingly enough, all three of the tribes have very, very active fishery programs, doing everything from fishery research to restoration. And for instance, the Kootenai tribe based in Bonner's Ferry has a major fish hatchery for white sturgeon and also for burbot. And so, yeah, we consider them a partner that we always like to work with.
Yeah. And even Idaho Fish and Game, I think, is a great helper for Trout Unlimited.
So there's a lot of projects that the Panhandle TU is engaged in, and with Aaron's job, it sounds like the focus is on the Coeur d'Alene Basin. Tell us a little bit more about the main objectives for your work on the Coeur d'Alene Basin.
My position's targeted at mining damages, but when you get involved in the Coeur d'Alene Basin with mining pollution, nutrients play a factor in how the lake functions, and not adding additional nutrients. So we can tie it back to roads or any degradation from sediment addition as well. So most of my restoration work is looking at streams that have been impacted by mining primarily.
Yeah, Aaron, why don't you tell us about some of the projects you're getting going on?
All right. So right now, the majority of my time is focused on a project called Pritchard Creek. It feeds into the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River. And that stream had historic hard rock mining. A number of mines operated there, and it's left with some contamination issues. And it also had an in-stream placer dredge, which they're huge floating dredges that would work over valley bottoms and turn them over. And about 5 miles of that bottom was completely turned over, and which means that the stream is going subsurface for a chunk of the season every year. And so we're working on restoring that with partners, with the state of Idaho, with Department of Environmental Quality, with Fish and Game, and also with the landowner, who is Idaho Forest Group Lumber Company.
Let's talk more about subsurface. So are you saying that Pritchard Creek just disappears for a stretch and then shows up again?
Yep, every summer, and sometimes even longer than that, for about 3 miles. it goes under quite a bit. We imagine about 8 feet underground in some portions.
And some streams do that naturally. Is this beyond its natural range of going subsurface?
We think so, because it is right in the dredged area and in no other reach. So it appears that way. And if you ever go to Pritchard Creek, it's pretty big. There's huge piles of rocks. It's very visual. And you can kind of track it just visually where it's going subsurface is related to those piles.
So I just have a quick side question for Bill, I think. How do you fly fish a stream that's underground?
well, Bill, that's definitely quite a challenge. But, you know, interestingly enough, given the geology in the Coeur d'Alene Basin, it's fairly common for especially some of these smaller headwater streams to flow subsurface during the dry summer conditions. And historically, over time, the fish have adapted to it, particularly Westlow cutthroat, and they're able to follow the water, so to speak, and there'll be sections of the stream that are completely dry, but then yet if you go above where there's a little bit of a flow, the fish are doing quite well. A number of years ago, working with the Idaho Department of Lands, we were on a field trip in the Silver Valley area, and the Department of Lands fish biologist was talking about this phenomena, and we were standing on a tributary to the South Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River, and he walked over to a dry stream channel, picked up a pretty good sized piece of cobble, and underneath it was wet, and sure enough, there were several little small cutthroat fry living in that teacup full of water. And so every forester that was with Joe DuPont that day became a believer and recognized the importance of even a dry stream channel for fish habitat.
That's interesting. That is so interesting. Aaron, are there other projects, or is that the one big one you're working on?
There's other projects. There's some information. One project in particular is we're working on up in the Upper St. Joe with the Forest Service on Red Ives Creek, and hopefully we'll get moving on a project up there this summer, and yeah.
Yeah, and why is it important? Why is that an important project?
Well, the Upper St. Joe's the last area where bull trout are hanging on in the whole Coeur d'Alene system. And there's very few of them up there. So the whole Upper St. Joe has been looked at for restoration work on almost all the tributaries to try to help bull trout, but also cutthroat in that basin. So it's kind of a high priority area.
Yeah, good.
And it's pretty well protected. I mean, it's mostly Forest Service owned and it's not going to be developed. And so it makes for long lasting restoration efforts.
Okay. Well, Aaron, you've talked about two projects that are a little bit south of where the Panhandle local chapter spends its time working. Do you see any projects that might combine our local chapter and your work, or are you a bit distanced from us here in the Panhandle?
Well, the Panhandle chapter includes the Coeur d'Alene Basin. So there are a lot of members of the chapter who I still seem to be excited to engage on those projects. But I mean, I am working with education in the Panhandle but my time right now is pretty much tied up in the Coeur d'Alene Basin. I have high hopes of TU expanding into the Pend'Oreille Basin and being able to take on project work up here, but we're still in the infancy.
There's so much to do. Tell us about some of the education work. You've mentioned that. Let's go there. Let's talk a little bit about the kinds of education work you do and perhaps also the chapter.
So, I mean, with my background, I love to get into classrooms and teach about fisheries, teach about macroinvertebrates, the bugs that are living in our streams and our waterways in general. And so I could potentially partner with anybody doing that. I do events you know, that like the fair or those types of events where you can set up a booth and teach about the same things. I would definitely assist and work with the chapter at any time and invite them along on those things. It's been hard since I've started. It's been COVID, so there really hasn't been a lot of outreach, but I have great intentions.
It will come back.
That's right. Well, at this time, let's shift back to Bill. And Bill, share with us some of the typical work of our local chapter.
The Panhandle chapter, for over 30 years now, has been very involved partnering with Vista Utilities in the operation of the Cabinet Gorge Dam on the lower Clark Fork River before it flows into Lake Ponderay. It was around 1990 or so, actually prior to that, that Avista started working on the federal relicensing of the dam, and the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited became one of the signing parties of that, what was later termed the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement. And so we're very much involved with Avista and many other partners in implementing that Clark Fork Settlement Agreement. And one of the primary ways that we participate is through the Bull Trout Education Program. And the Panhandle chapter receives annual funding from Avista to implement a bull trout education program. And one of the main emphasis for that program is youth education of conducting field trips. And in fact, we have several scheduled for later this spring and have our fingers crossed that we'll actually be able to have in-person field trips. But anyway, this brings in students from elementary schools around the area to learn about the importance of bull trout, the need to protect the bull trout habitat, and that sort of thing. And interestingly enough, Aaron was involved in the very beginning of that project a number of years ago. We partnered specifically with Idaho Fish and Game on that education project. But then we also have some other responsibilities in the bull trout education program, of helping get the word out, the need to protect bull trout and its habitat.
Yeah, that's an education part of Trout Unlimited. What about other projects? What else is going on?
For two or three years now, we've been partnering with the Forest Service at the Priest Lake Ranger Station, the Kalispell Tribe, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a restoration project in Hughes Fork, in Hughes Meadows area. Hughes Fork is a tributary to the Upper Priest River. It's a bull trout stream and also has native West Slope cutthroat in it. And then over the years, then brook trout have been introduced in the stream. But interesting on this area, it's a beautiful mountain meadows. But in World War II, the U.S. military drained the meadow area to form an emergency airstrip for aircraft flying across the country. And that straightened a stream that had quite a bit of meandering and fish habitat in it. And so now the partners have been working together for several years to reestablish the connectivity of that stream. And so we've partnered with those organizations in doing that project. A project that I would like to see us participate in this coming year is we were looking at some proposed projects by the Bonners Ferry Ranger Station on a restoration project they have planning, and several of the streams have brook trout that have been introduced and are competing with the native West Slope cutthroat. And so I suggested to some Forest Service biologists the need to try to eradicate the brook trout, and that's a project that they're interested in doing. And so I'm hopefully that we could have some Trout Unlimited volunteers and go up and do brook trout eradication. These are some really small streams kind of that flow into Snow Creek and Myrtle Creek and in that area west of Bonners Ferry. Mm-hmm.
Bill, does that involve you fly fishing for brook trout and taking them home and putting them in the frying pan?
Well, you know, it gets a little more scientific and technical than that, Julie. Although I know some over the years, Idaho Fish and Game has done projects similar to that, and it was catch as many brook trout as you could during the day, and you always had brook trout for dinner at night. But this would involve electrofishing and some small streams to catch and then remove the brook trout. Thanks for the suggestion to bring a rod and reel.
I think the additional science you're searching for, William, is butter and garlic. But
butter and garlic.
The local chapter's also been active with something that I believe we missed last year, maybe is on the hopper this year or maybe deferred, but that's the annual Trout and About Festival. What's happening with that?
Yes, you know. Well, that certainly was a victim of COVID for 2020. And at a national level, Trout Unlimited is one of the underwriters for the Fly Fishing Film Festival and has offered it to chapters for a virtual showing, and chapters could use it as a fundraising activity. What we just recently decided in our chapter is because things are starting to open up, so to speak, we have our fingers crossed that we can maybe offer the Fly Fishing Film Festival in person at the Panada Theater in the fall. And so that was a recent decision that the board just made, and we hope to be able to carry that out. But that's it's always a great event, especially in the Panada. It fills up the Panada. There's a number of drawings for prizes and raffle items and giveaway items, and those just truly spectacular fly fishing films, and the audience really gets involved in it, the hooting and hollering and everything else. And so, you know, to watch it in your own living room on a laptop or a tablet is just not going to be the same experience of experiencing that in the Panada.
I agree. It's an inspiring film festival, and hopefully it will be happening again soon. You know, we've been talking about the projects that Trout Unlimited is working on, but I'd like to just ask the question for a person who isn't a member of Trout Unlimited and might consider volunteering or becoming a member. What resources do you offer the person who's thinking of joining?
I used to carry around membership applications for Trout Unlimited. And if I was talking with someone about the organization, then I would hand them one of the membership applications. But now it's just so much easier to advise them, go online to Trout Unlimited, click on the button that says, you know, new membership application, and it's so much easier to do it online. But you know, one of the big sales items that I use to promote Trout Unlimited is the quarterly magazine. It's coincidentally titled Trout Magazine, and it's just amazing the amount of content that they put into that magazine, and that alone is worth the $35 membership fee in my opinion. But then you know, the Trout Unlimited website is every day changing its content. Of course, that's free access for everyone, but it's good to have that direct connection and follow some of the activities that are on that website. And then, of course, it enrolls you into the local chapter for local activities as well. So if you're interested in promoting the protection of cold water fishery, whether it's for fishing reasons or not, then that $35 investment for annual membership in Trout Unlimited is very well worth it.
And if you become a local chapter member, you're also automatically part of the national organization. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I was going to add a benefit there to becoming a member. I did a little homework for this interview on the amount of restoration work that was going around the nation that TU is taking part in and leading some of it. And they had last year over 1,100 restoration projects on streams. And some of these are huge projects that they're managing. And I think when you become a member and support the organization, either with just volunteer activities, then you're getting to take a part in that. And it helps the national organization exist because they have to pay for a lot of overhead. And there's a lot of things that they can't pay for out of grants and foundation support or project support. So it's a great way to be involved in getting good work done on the ground as well.
Yeah, well, what have we missed, guys? Is there anything you'd like to add, either Bill or Aaron?
Well, I would like to add that we at the chapter level are certainly glad to have Aaron in her position as a TU staff member. The state of Idaho has probably the largest state staff organization of any state in the nation. It's located in Boise. There's a national science team based in Boise that does work throughout the Western United States. It's not that I had felt that we were neglected in the panhandle, because any time that I had ever contacted the state Trout Unlimited office, then it was always just immediate response and to the contact and that sort of thing. But to have a local person working right in our chapter area, and let me point out that of our 350 members of the Panhandle chapter, about three quarters of them reside in Kootenai County, and our chapter is based here in Sandpoint. And so with Aaron focusing her efforts on the Coeur d'Alene Basin, then that's going to be a direct conduit from a lot of our chapter membership to getting involved with restoration projects. So it also helps that Aaron lives on the same street as our Trout Unlimited office, so she's able to drop in when we have in-person meetings, and she's just only a phone call or email away. So we're very, very pleased to have someone in the position, but even more importantly than that, to have Aaron filling the position.
Very good. Well, Aaron, any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, I have a few. I guess fundamentally, since I've joined Trout Unlimited on the national level, I have really come to recognize like what an amazing organization it is. And I'm really appreciative of the open-mindedness of the organization. They're all about helping fish, helping waterways, improve them. And they're willing to work with anybody to get that done. And I really have grown in my admiration about the organization in general. And I'm glad that they took an interest in the Coeur d'Alene Basin, and I hope that it expands into the Pendere. But the Coeur d'Alene Basin has been a hard hit area, and it has a lot of challenges, and it's nice to bring even more attention to getting stuff done there. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's great that we're going to have some focus on that area that could use quite a bit of help. Good. Well, that leaves me with my last question then. Bill, how's the fishing?
Well, we're in that narrow window, as you well know, Julie, of what we call pre-runoff. It's before the spring runoff starts. And so for the most part, the rivers and streams are running at a pretty low and fishable level right now. The water tends to be pretty cold this time of the year, and trout, being cold-blooded fish, aren't quite as active as we would like to see them. But for the next several weeks or so, then now's a good time to get out. Then we'll have to kind of do something else during the runoff season before the streams really get in good shape for the summer season. But thanks for asking, Julie.
Well, that's a great report. Thank you both for joining us today.
Yes, and if you'll tell us just one more time, the best way to contact Trout Unlimited, is it just through the website, Bill? And repeat that if you would.
Let's see, I would just encourage just Google Trout Unlimited, and it should be one of the first items to show up.
Yeah, very easy. And that'll direct you folks to the Panhandle chapter. They can get signed up if they'd like to join or begin volunteering or get to know us. Get to know you.
That's
and
correct.
Us. Very good. Well, with that, I'm going to conclude the interview. This is KRFY Community Conversations, and today we've been joined by two Trout Unlimited folks. The first is president of the Panhandle chapter, Bill Love. Thank you, Bill. And a very new member to the national organization, Aaron Plou, who is a new project manager for the Coeur d'Alene Basin. Thank you both for joining us. This has been KRFY, and we'll see you next week.
Well, this wraps up another community conversation. Thanks for tuning in to KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org, and all of our community conversation shows are later posted as podcasts and available on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Even as vaccinations roll out, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at significant levels across our country, our county, our state, and our region. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses. Keep a 6-foot distance apart, wash up, and stay at home as much as possible. And stay home if you are sick. If we all help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Before we close, we have a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to find out more information about the song you just heard, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page. Once there, find the playlist link, and then you can see the name of the song and the artist who performed it. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.